When we implement a fix or a product, it touches every employee. All of the staff, all our employees are end users. So they build a trust with us that we're going to come up with and implement something that they can use and that it's going to be safe. And it's going to do everything that we're being told it's going to do. And so that is the scary part for HR.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary. Now, today's guest is Shanda Mihaly, Chief Human Resources Officer at Axiom, a long-term health and assisted living organization serving communities across the U.S. And Shanda brings a frontline perspective to HR transformation in one of the most complex or compliance-driven industries, healthcare. While others tout AI implementation wins, Shanda gives voice to the reality that most HR teams face, where you're understaffed, overwhelmed, and under pressure to innovate without the time or tools to do so. So we're going to go into a little bit and unpack what it really means to make change in HR when your plate is already really full, which I think is something we can all relate to. Shanda, welcome to the podcast. Excited for this.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited too. It's definitely something that as we explore more of it, the Wild West of AI, it gets either more scary or you get more comfortable, either one. And so hopefully we can take camaraderie in where our feelings are all at the same time.
Okay, let's start right there. So kids, tell me, so we're in 2025. What are the feelings of towards the promise of AI for you, from your perspective?
You hit it on the head when we are very compliance driven. So that becomes, there's the innovation and the fun that comes with AI, the idea that you can do so much more with the little that we have. But there's also that compliance piece that we always have to be very protective of the information that we house, whether that be just a general HRIS system, that there's a lot of employee information there. But then if you are in healthcare or any private information sector, you have to protect that too. I love the adventure of AI and that exploration area, but it does come with you want to put your guardrails up and figure out where those need to be. And so it is really, we're all exploring that together. So apprehension and excitement, I would say they pair really right now.
Okay, that's apprehension and excitement. Like, how far advanced have we gotten, like, from your perspective? Because a big issue of the promise, anyway, the promise of AI is to help overloaded teams across the board. In our case, overloaded HR teams to just take things off their plate and get to it. But we were talking earlier about a vicious cycle, right? Sometimes where you can't actually get into it. Can you talk a little bit about how that has played out, like, for you?
Yeah, absolutely. We're limited. And most HR teams are. They're thin on people, thin on resources, a thin budget. So we're all pretty much operating as high of our title and skill set as we possibly can. We're asked to do more with less. And that becomes frustrating because every time you want to vet, I mean, I probably get 15 emails a day. Give me 35 minutes of your time. I can show you what we can do. And there is not enough of me or anyone on my team to do that, to make that happen. If I could, I would hire someone just to do that for me. And that might be out there. There's probably an AI platform for that. And if not, it might be a good opportunity. But just having the kind of the know-how of navigating all of that to vet those different platforms so that you can implement something. But right now, without that resource, you have to get ingenuitive even with AI, just to make that happen. So one of the things that I use, like the free or the $20 version of AI for, is giving me the direction. Where should I go? I know when you just Google something, you get 30 sponsored links, and they're all going to tell you that this is what you need, but they're sponsored. So I really don't know how much I can trust that. So when I go through, and if I use ChatGPT or any of the other platforms, I generally use Chat just because it's pretty easy, user-friendly, but you could use the other ones. But when I ask, I just go down the five whys. So in healthcare, we have what's called the five whys. And I think it's generally, it's other organizations do that too. But that you just keep asking, you ask a broad question, and then you start filtering it down till you get to one that gives you some specifics. So I'll ask a broad question like, how can I help my employees with resources for a fringe benefit like childcare for the state of Kansas or whatever state we're helping? Mm-hmm. Most of our facilities are in Kansas. So then it will give me some of the broad answers, and I'll go explore those answers, see which ones might actually fit for us, and then go back to Chat and ask more specific questions like, how would I help an employee fill this application out? Or what are the qualifications? So that is really helpful. But the issue with going back to these different platforms, there's so many products right now, and they all want you to try them. And there's a lot of issue with doing that because there's a big difference between HR and operations, finance, IT. Because when we implement a fix or a product, it touches every employee. Whereas if finance implements a product, it's generally going to be for the finance department or IT for the IT department. But when HR does it, all of the staff, all our employees are end users. So they build a trust with us that we're going to come up with and implement something that they can use and that it's going to be safe and it's going to do everything that we're being told it's going to do. And so that is the scary part for HR, is being able to say, this is what we're going to do and this is going to work this way. Because we all know that salespeople and then implementation people are very different. So when you get sold a product, you think, oh, it's going to be amazing. And then it ends up underperforming. So yeah, all of that stuff is mixed in.
There's so much to what you're saying I want to unpack. So I definitely want to get to the vendors and like the explosion that's happening right now. But yeah. Even before that, what you mentioned is that you're being asked to do more with less, right? Generally speaking, and also as you look across your peers, could you just really help me understand viscerally, what does that mean? What is the more, like the things that like is coming in as for like pressure or demand or asks of you and your department and your peers? And what is the less? And maybe that's a little bit simpler in terms of like resources, but is it people or just maybe even like the seniority of people or just straight up budget outside of that for tools? But help me bring that to light, because I think that is something that is happening industry wide. But tell me your perspective about the what is the more and what is the less?
Yeah, I love that question. Less is less budget. We also have less time because we, the general rule, you're supposed to have one HR employee for 150 of your staff or your employees, your FTEs. There are very few HR departments I know that run at full capacity like that. So you not only have less physical people on staff, but training time, you're asked to give them less time in training because you're running thin. So you don't have a lot of time to give them. But you also don't have the budget, the salary budget, to hire people that have a lot of experience and a lot of time in HR. So they might be more novice to it. And so you're introducing them to the huge world, multifaceted world of HR. So that's what I would say I mean by less. And then budgetary, we don't have a lot of exploratory budget to go to try this, try that. Mm-hmm. Does this work? We are asked to do more because HR 15 years ago, the thought of well-being for an employee was really not our job as much. There was an element to it, but yeah. Now it's our job to explore this place of mental well-being and social well-being and their sense of community. All of that is kind of, it's ambiguous. Like it's not tangible. You can't put a dollar amount on it. You can't really fill out a piece of paper and say, okay, this is what this employee needs. It's this sense of self that we're asked to give back to employees. And sometimes we lack it in ourselves. We're not self-aware enough to know what that means to me, let alone what it means for an employee. So yeah, trying to hit that is really hard.
That's a good point. And especially when you can say it's not tangible, but it is very tangible when the department was called benefits like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
When it is completely an administrative function, an employee wouldn't expect all these things from this department. So right. I guess part of this is the expectations, and this is pre-AI, right? It's just been moving in this kind of direction where there's just more kind of demand coming. But then the less, it's something that everyone is facing these days. You know, that 150 number seems, it's always like in the future. Like it's never actually something that people get to in a lot of organizations. And maybe that ratio is like increasing, right? Maybe it's going to be 200 or 300-1. And that's just actually the target. And maybe it shifts more. Do you think that shifting on the less, is that, do you think that's fundamentally driven by just like these budget pressures specifically, like for HR? Is that because of the expectation of the ability to drive at least the same, if not more, productivity because of the latest tools? Or is it just the realities of businesses? Or what is driving that there's less budget going in towards HR?
We're always looked at as a cost center. So, and I do think that's improving. I think like from the CEO seat and the CFO seat, because we're adopting more of that, you know, retention, engagement, well-being aspect, they are starting to shift the way they approach and look at HR and even our budget, reinvesting into the employee, which means reinvesting into the HR department. But I also think that because with the advent of AI, and the adoption of it, this expectation, because most CEOs don't know what HR does. So in the mind, it's an easy, find a platform, find an AI platform that will do XYZ for you. And that would ultimately be the awesome goal. But in reality, since we are still so fledgling with AI and knowing and learning what it does and beginning to trust it, I don't think we're quite there yet. So yeah, your point to one day having 1 to 300 people, I think that's a reasonable expectation, but probably not yet.
Right. So then let's talk about that vendor side, just the dynamic that's emerged because there's been an explosion of a lot of innovation happening and with AI for various HR applications. But then I think you've already started to voice a little bit just the trepidation, right, of a CHRO to say, hold on, how can I trust this particular platform? I have to think about compliance, or is this really going to be something I can roll out to the entire employee or stakeholder base? To some degree, that's always been there, right? Like vendors promising things and things maybe not going exactly to plan. How do you think that's shifted like lately? Have you shifted your strategies as a buyer in response?
Yes, it has shifted more of the, let me pay for your time. So a lot of vendors are saying you'll get a $125 gift card if we get 35 minutes of your time.
Sure.
And if you respond to every one of them, you could make $1 million in gift cards. But the practicality of it, we have a job to do, and that's not my job title, is just AI exploration. That would be fun, but right. It's just not realistic. The One thing that's been definitely helpful for me is finding your professional equivalent, even in like as far as HR goes, or if your industry is in banking or wherever it is, find your professional equivalent in a similar sized company. Just explore them online and then reach out and just be honest what's been working for you. If you can join a round table, there are a lot of same titled people in different professions that have created round tables that you can join. And then you just have a network. And I totally recommend a network because not everybody can find a mentor. I absolutely recommend a mentor, but a network is great because then you can ask a question to all of them. What are you guys using for your onboarding processes? How do you guys do your background checks? How are you vetting your candidates? And then asking those key questions to multiple people, even if they don't have a direct answer, it causes them, it sparks a motivation in them to research that too. And collectively, you can find good answers for a lot of the questions that you have. But as far as with the vendors themselves, when I do see something that I think might be a value, as I'm going through that process, I have several questions that I don't fail to ask because they're very important to me. And because we are rolling out a system to every employee, I don't want to lose their trust every time we do that. And then 6 months down the road, that didn't work. We have to redact it, retry. Oh, I have some key questions that I ask. I always ask to get the SOC report. I want to review it, and then I want to send it to my IT team and just say, what does this look like to you? How is this reading to you? I may even send it to our liability just to ask them to review it because they have a legal team. So they'll review it and see if it reads right, because I don't know very much about security. But somebody,
for the audience out there, so the SOC report or SOC 2, there's type 1 or type 2. It's a security compliance report for software company. So that's like a shorthand for an IT to know that this, depending on what the report says, that is, but it's third party audited. So it's getting you a sense of, can this organization protect your data, which is like a starting point. But then, you mentioned something interesting. I think that might be something you might uniquely have access to because of the industry you're in. You have a healthy compliance team that's around what your policies are towards your customers, I assume. And then You're leveraging that group as well to help you from a compliance perspective.
Correct. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. But it might be worth sending it through even if you have access to your general liability property team, if you're maybe not part of that team, I am, but if you're not part of that team, usually like your finance department is, and you might even send it to them and say, hey, can you have our GLPO look through this SOC report and see if it's something that they feel is compliant to the organization, because they're looking for cybersecurity threats. They're looking for any kind of breach because it is the Wild West. So you want to make sure that anybody you're introducing to your platform can't just start, or there's not a risk of starting some kind of leak.
Well, what else are you asking? What are these questions that you think about?
I don't want to say raw, but I do ask some hard-hitting questions with them because they can bells and whistle it all day long. But I really want to know on the pragmatic side, after it's been implemented, is anybody renewing with them? Because anybody can say, okay, yeah, we'll budget that this year and we'll start it. But I want to know, like, how long have they been in business? How innovative are they? And is anyone that's under their current book of business, are they renewing? Because I think that answers way more than just, oh, we got 15 new clients this year. How many did you have last year that's still coming back? I think that's really a testimony to whether something's working for someone or not. I always ask for a recommendation. So do they have a referral? Generally in the same size business, preferably in the healthcare world, that I can talk to and that I can ask some honest questions with. There's one other question that I try to ask is if they have a soft rollout that we can trial run, like on a dummy platform, and just ask a bunch of questions to and see what we can get back. If those responses satisfy me, then I believe that they'll satisfy my employees. Those are a few.
This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. That's a good list. And then you're right. It's almost harder, right? When you're flooded with options to kind of feel like the pressure's on to get it right, if at all. And also, if you're going to go in at all. And the other untold cost, and let's explore that a little bit, because you mentioned, I don't have a title of AI exploration role. That'd be nice. There's a lot of time to figure out both the business process and the tooling and like how we would actually potentially roll it out and how we combine the tool to our particular needs, the implementation aspect of it, not to mention the change management of it all. There's a lot to do even beyond the vendor evaluation like stage. Is that like, how does that work for like you and your team? As a CHRO, are you seeing that you and your peers are like rolling your sleeves up more than maybe you were like a few years back? Because a lot of our high level and strategic questions being asked, even in a tool rollout versus having, I don't know, someone focusing on people operations or an HRG taking on this kind of evaluation to like roll out phases. Is that also evolving in your view?
Yes. Yeah. The more exposure that we have, that our team has to how AI works, those different products, the more educated we are. So every time we are introduced to a different idea, it either sparks thoughts of, okay, maybe the direction we thought we wanted to go isn't quite what we want. So we're constantly fine-tuning our approach and our questions that we ask, but also even the prompts that we put into regular chat, where we're getting smarter as it's getting smarter. So adapting our approach to those things with less of a doe-eyed, oh, wow, that's so cool, to, okay, that works like this, but how can I make it work for me? Yeah. So
let me ask a question just from the executive standpoint as well, where the leadership team is naively thinking, yeah, just go explore, trial, implement different tools so that you can now get the same level of productivity and outcomes that you were while you have, quote, less. So how does that conversation like happen, and how would you advise like for your peers, right, to have that conversation productively?
That's tough. It's always tough to be the spokesperson, to go to the executive team and say, I have this idea and I think it would be great. And the first question obviously is, how much does it cost? And then what's the return? What will we get back if we do try to implement that? And what's the need? So before I can even present a possible solution, I have to present the problem, how many people that problem affects, if we've done any kind of survey with our staff to find out if that's really going to be something they want, or is it just in my mind that, oh, I think our team really needs this. And when in reality, maybe they don't. So I have to go through the scope of every employee that we have, their whole life cycle, and determine what would be the most valuable thing that I can add for them, and then put together why it would be valuable, how much it would cost, but the return. Because obviously retention is so important for every HR department. You lose so much when you have to just constantly retrain and rehire people. So that's always one of the forefront questions from the executive team is that going to help?
Retention.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest levers you have to pull. The trouble is, oh, just like you were talking about, the more being asked of HR, including things like mental well-being and sense of community and social well-being, that theoretically should translate towards retention and everything. It's just very hard to pin these things down, right? Depending on the particular project that you're putting in place. But then one thing I'm hearing is it's often reverse with AI, where the executive team, it's not the HR leaders going to the team saying, hey, I have an idea that's going to help with onboarding or help with mental wellness or a new benefit that we should have, whatever it is. And so here's the cost and I think we should do it. It's more like top down saying, hey, everyone needs to be using AI in everything that they do and go off and come back with what you've got. Are you seeing that dynamic happen more with you and your peers? Because almost like this blank mandate without, I don't want to say teeth, but it's just a general posture, right? That, hey, we need to do X, which you don't really hear that before as universally.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, that's been the theme of probably the last 3 months, specifically the last 3 months of our executive meetings has been, we need to use that more. I think the challenge is, predominantly, what does it look like? What is it? Which platform is going to be what we need? But also, how much can we trust it right now? It does feel like murky waters. It feels you don't want to necessarily be the pioneer of a brand new platform that promises all these wonderful things, but you also don't want to be behind that curve. So hitting that sweet spot of revolutionizing, but also being able to trust it, that it's went through some processes and some of those kinks have been worked out, because you don't want to be the guinea pig that ends up paying for the sins of AI.
No, it's right. With the role of like safeguarding both the company and employees, which is like the duty, right, of the function. And okay, so we've gotten a lot of heavy doses of reality here, right? Like of all the compliance, the vendor relationship, the time needed, right? So even if you want to do this, like there's a one-time cost that we have to like figure out and get over. Well, maybe we should talk about that just for a couple more minutes. So how do you do that? So let's talk about like your team or like the HR team in general. Do we think that your set of people operations or HRGs or recruiters, you know, to some degree, like the business partners, but just the centers of excellence, which is everyone who is in the function, you know, executing, doing administrative work, making sure, doing the job to ensure that, you know, employees don't have to worry about all these things, right? And that their questions are answered and policies are being renewed. How ready is this whole group of the HR function for playing a key part in any of these things, like evaluating to implementing to coming up with ideas for and all of that? How do you view that?
That's a loaded question. There is so much there to unpack, because it really depends on the caliber or the quality of the people that you have on your team. How inventive, how creative, how explorative are they? How comfortable are they with trying new things or looking into new things? You might have some people on your team who are kind of set in ways that old HR, that we do this way. Hopefully they're not quite pen and paper, but the adoption rate is different for every person. So if you have willing participants, then I think you can absolutely, the sky's the limit there. Their willingness to go explore, you might have to rein them in, versus someone whose team is a little more not willing and they're resistant to it, or so apprehensive, they're too scared to move. And that could be actually a detriment to your HR team. So I would say if you have someone on your team like that, you might need to reevaluate and determine if they're really in the right role, because HR is ever changing. So many of our other operations are as well, but HR truly is, because we're dealing with the technology part, but mostly we're dealing with the human part. And the human landscape has changed so much in the last 20 years. So if you have a resistant employee, you probably want to think through that process and see if they're in the right role, because we have to move forward. We have to adopt things that we're scared of a little bit.
So we're all about future-proofing the function and thinking about how at every level of the HR function, how we can look forward to like how that will evolve so that it's really central and serving its purpose. So, I mean, one aspect you're talking about is just the willingness, the adaptability, the willingness to change seems to be like important. Are there other qualities that you see as we go into the next age where humans and the job, everything will continue changing, that you think will be more, even more important?
Yeah, I think that the next generation that grew up with the iPad kids, I think that they're going to be amazing at knowing what they want, knowing how to read it, just like our generation is pretty good at going into the library and understanding the Dewey Decimal System. Those kids are just going to walk into a technology age where they're like, yep, that's what I want. They're just going to identify so quickly. And it is cool to be on the ground floor, that first floor building up. But I think that they will take it and run with it and just be so good at knowing what they want and knowing how to execute it. So I'm excited for them.
Wow. Let's go into the future a little bit and be optimistic around the technology, right? So what are the kinds of use cases that you're seeing, right, that are just things of drudgery that you think there's opportunity, assuming everything works out, the technology as promised, and that it actually is compliant and safe? What are the different areas that you think as a function we could really potentially leverage new technology for? Or forget the technology, what are things that you think maybe should just be eliminated from human work going forward?
Yes, I love it. So I wish we had AI or chat 4 years ago when COVID hit. I could have totally used that to write COVID policies.
Yeah.
That was drudgery. It was pretty awful because every day the CDC was coming out with a new regulation. And so you had to not only create from scratch a huge policy. It was pages and pages of policy that hit every note, but that it was also constantly changing. So absolutely love AI for policy writing. I check it. Definitely do your due diligence. Check to make sure all the facts are straight. Everything works right, because we know that there is a little bias there about AI. And then your employee handbook. In fact, when the beginning of this year, so I've been with this company for 4 years. When I first started, one of my big overarching goals was to update the employee handbook. It was 11 years old. And I thought, that's one of my big, hairy, audacious goals. I am going to update that book. January 1st, 25, I had a new handbook. And thanks to the help of chat, because I would throw policy after policy into it and ask it to give me the updated federal and state laws surrounding that policy. And obviously, I have to do a little fact checking just to make sure it's okay. But that helped so much. Policies, your handbooks. I eventually see onboarding being a really cool part. So instead of an employee just being introduced to your HRIS system and they go through and check boxes, I see there being a little widget or something. Remember when we had Word doc? When you'd start a new Word doc, what was his...
You're talking
about Clippy. Clippy. I don't know where he went. But like something like Clippy to go through with your onboarding and your benefits to just help you. So you ask him questions like, I have 4 people in my family and we have these medications. What do you recommend? And then Clippy or whatever his name is, tell you what the best policy what the best benefit package is. So I definitely see it growing into this very personable character that our employee lives with and just grows with as they go through their tenure. So I think it's exciting, but I just don't know how long it's going to take before we get there.
Let's just go through the employee lifecycle. On the recruiting side, promise or peril with AI?
Right now, it feels like peril because there is so much bias that goes with the selection process. And so I think after they work out the kinks of bias, which I think that's possible, I think that there is a way for that platform to be to where, you know, there is nothing that AI is looking for except for the best candidate. So once we get through that, I think it'll be great. I think that automated process, because whether we like it or not, humans have bias too. So we're working through our own kinks in that way. And I think AI will develop eventually to be there too.
Okay, so it's a still very, on the recruiting side, very human touch centered approach that you're taking. And how about things like, what else is that? Payroll, benefits. You talked a lot about like policy. Like, clearly that's like a big area, like policy, like writing, that's like a big area. Yeah, anything else that comes to mind for you?
Just any question an employee has, I would love to have less of my team hands-on in that process because so many of those questions are the same answer.
Same.
So that would be great. And just even a well-being platform, somewhere where an employee can go and it's a trusted source where they can get practical help or advice or resources to get them what they need. I think that that would be wonderful.
Thanks for looking into the future a little bit for me. And then can we also talk about the HR function itself? So imagine these kinds of things exist, right? To help our recruiters, our managers, our HRGs, as well as business partners across the board, CHROs. Yeah, what does that future function like look like? What are people doing all day versus today? And how is it different from today?
My team could spend less time with those transactional items. I would definitely want to see them expand into the strategic and creative. I think because we're so limited, we don't get to have boots on the ground. So they don't get to make visits to those staff and just have real conversations. But I think if we had more technology in the background doing the functional part, then my human resources could actually be out there interacting with humans. So that would be really valuable because I think that's missing, the connection. The other thing is just the creative element of HR. We create employee well-being courses. We create leadership and management courses. And so having more human resources to do that would be beneficial to our midline staff, to our floor staff, to really everybody.
Like better personalized learning and development work, right? So that it's specific, and maybe even for the specific person. Imagine that, like you're literally creating a course for one specific person, not even like a function or something, because that's possible.
That'd be incredible. Yeah, I would love that.
Interesting. So then what do you think if you're giving advice to someone who's getting into or considering getting into this function early on in their career, they're just getting in, coming out of college, what advice might you have for them as they're going into the HR function and obviously wanting to be future-proof themselves?
Yeah, I would say pick that part of HR that they love the very most and then see how they can make that absolutely streamlined and effective towards the people that it's going to affect, most especially the ground level staff. So anyone that's doing those absolutely essential jobs that executives are important, but no one is as important. The heart of any organization is their frontline staff. So that 80-20 rule of making the biggest impact with as much effort as they can for those people would actually... It means the most to me personally, but it also says the most to the broad group because it does go up like that. The people talk, they're always praising those who do for them who in their behalf. So that word goes back to the CEO generally. They make themselves valuable if they're affecting in a positive way those frontline staff. So if you have a niche in that direction, definitely explore it. Helping others.
Helping others seems like it's generally good advice. So thank you for that. While we wrap up here, Shonda, how can people connect with you or follow your work? Is LinkedIn the best way?
That is a great resource. I'm not on there as much as I should be because I'm busy, but
we've been talking about it for time.
But right. They're welcome to email me, or LinkedIn is a great way to connect, just to message and get to know. I love connecting with people and being a mentor for those, or finding a mentor of my own. I love that. Yes, LinkedIn or email is a great platform.
Well, wonderful. So thank you so much for this conversation, Shonda. We kind of covered so much ground from your honest take on the pressures that they were facing in this particular moment in the CHRO kind of role, between sandwiched in between the ask for more with less and with an ever-changing landscape and not enough time and this potential vicious cycle that we need to kind of get out of. But that's not to say that there isn't a ton of promise with where everything can go. So I appreciate you looking forward as well. And that these are all solvable problems. And there's really a promise that we can solve these things better. And it might just take us some time to really get there. And I love all your thoughts about the questions to ask vendors or potential partners and the idea of really networking and helping almost like in groups, like trying things out together. So you're really like being very real with your peers as you're ideally, it's like, you know, you and your colleagues in your network are together trying a tool or something to kind of see the nuances and differences. But with all that said, thank you again, Shanda. This has been a wonderful conversation. And to everyone out there who is looking to innovate and future-proof your own organization and your own HR function, thank you for listening in. I hope you found this as useful as I did. With all that said, see you next time. Bye now.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slackbot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.